His World War II reputation is legendary, resolute, dogged, and optimistic. His wartime image is iconic, scowling, cigar-chomping, and whiskey-fortified. But the Churchill we know in his 60s was forged in his 20s when he went to war as a correspondent and ended up in the fight. Based on his private letters and wartime dispatches, the new book, Winston Churchill Reporting, Adventures of a Young War Correspondent, reveals Churchill as an ambitious young journalist in the center of ferocious combat, where he established his reputation not only as a talented reporter, but also as a daring, brave, and fearsome soldier. The new book is by Simon Reed, an award-winning reporter and the author of 7 previous books. He has written for the San Francisco Chronicle and Publishers Weekly, and he joins us on the roundtable this morning. Simon, thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. Why do you think that this aspect of Winston Churchill's career is so often ignored?
Really, because of his World War II leadership. I mean, if you think of Churchill, what most likely comes to mind is Churchill as Prime Minister during the Second World War. He's become so iconic in that role, and he's a figure that stands very large over history. And because of his success in the Second World War and what he accomplished, I think it sort of has overshadowed everything else that he did. But sort of, as you said in your intro, Joe, you know, Churchill was in his mid-60s when he entered into Downing Street, you know, to take on Britain's war effort. Most people at that age are retiring or hoping to retire. Churchill had had an entire career prior to that point. And so I've always been kind of curious, you know, when you think of Churchill, the war leader, sort of what shaped this personality, what shaped this figure that still casts a very large shadow over the 20th century. I think if you go back and you look at everything Churchill did, I think his years as a war correspondent, which he did between the ages of 20 and 25, I think that is probably the most formative period of his life. Just, you know, you saw several Churchillian traits come to the forefront there. He discovers his love of cigar, his love of whiskey, and also he hones his command of the English language through the articles that he wrote, which obviously he puts to great use in his war speeches of 1940.
How did he become a correspondent? How did he get on that path?
Right. Well, he was a junior officer in Her Majesty's Army. This is 1895, and there's not much going on in the British Empire in 1895. The empire is at relative peace, and Churchill was always a man who can never tolerate boredom. He always had to be doing something. And so he's sitting in his barracks. He's bored. He's a cavalry officer, and he decides he wants some adventure. He's curious to see how he might hold up under enemy fire and how he might perform in combat. And he's also thinking that he wants to follow in his father's footsteps and go into politics. And so he decides that he's going to go off to a war zone and sort of test himself. And at that point in time, we're talking about October 1895, there is an uprising in Cuba where the Cubans have risen up against Spanish colonial rule. And so Churchill decides he's going to go off and check the action out for himself. And his motivations, he's kind of got a couple of motivations. Number one, he's looking for adventure. Number two, as I said, he's wondering how he might hold up in combat. And he's hoping to build a public platform for himself to kickstart a political career. And he figures, well, you know, I can go off to a war zone and make a name for myself in combat, and this will sort of get the ball rolling. But in order to get his name out there, he needs sort of a medium to do that. And so he decides he's going to report from the war zone. So he puts his mother to work sort of as a liaison for him, approaching different newspapers. And he gets a commission with the London Daily Graphic to write 5 articles from the front line in Cuba. And so he goes off as a 20-year-old. He actually comes under enemy fire for his first time on the morning of his 21st birthday and realizes, oh, you know, perhaps this wasn't the smartest idea to go off to an active war zone. But it does stoke his appetite for more. And so the career sort of starts rolling from there. The articles he writes from Cuba, you know, he's an excellent writer already. It gets the attention of other people. It makes it easier for him to land writing contracts. And he goes on to cover another three campaigns, each one more violent than the last.
Simon Reed is our guest. The name of his book, Winston Churchill Reporting, Adventures of a Young War Correspondent, published by DeCapo. Bring us to how his experiences as a correspondent ultimately shaped his view on war.
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's an interesting evolution when you sort of go through his experiences. Like I said, in Cuba, he went off there mainly for the adventure. And when he comes under fire on his 21st birthday, he's attached to a column of Spanish troops, and they're working their way through the Cuban jungle. And, you know, it's thick vegetation, it's hot, it's humid, the vegetation's closing in on all sides. And this favors the Cubans who pursue a campaign of sort of guerrilla warfare. And he mounts his horse on the morning of his 21st birthday. He's in the middle of the Spanish column, and the end of the column comes under fire a few yards away from where Churchill is. And up to that point, this had sort of been a game for him. You know, he was in a foreign land, sort of unique surroundings. He was enjoying Cuban cigars, and it was an adventure. But he suddenly realizes that there is a real risk of getting killed in war, something that had never sort of really kind of dawned on him. You know, he's a young man. He's sort of imbued with the invincibility of youth. After Cuba, he still wants more adventures. So the next campaign he covers is on the northwest frontier of India, and we're talking the region that is now sort of the border area between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And this is where he sees fighting for the first time of a very savage nature, and he actually comes close to dying several times. He kills quite a few men in combat. The fighting is very ferocious. And for the first time, he realizes that war can really be a shoddy business. And what's interesting, Joe, is, you know, with each campaign is more violent than the last one he covers, we see this very complex view of war take shape in him, in that he likes the adventure of war and the thrill of combat, and he likes the complexity and scope of large-scale military campaigns. But he hates the human cost of war. He hates the blood toll. And in each campaign he covers, he sort of laments the fact that, you know, soldiers die based on the whim of a general. You know, a general makes a stupid decision, then the men up front pay. And so he develops an attitude. He develops a real loathing for inept leadership. He develops a great respect for men on the front line, regardless of the side they're fighting on. You know, he figures if you're in the front line and you're doing the fighting, that's a true testament to your character. And we see that, you know, we see that come to play in Churchill, the war leader, where, you know, he wanted his generals to be on the offensive. He did hate ineptitude. He was initially opposed to the D-Day landings because he was fearful of the casualties. I think the other big thing that sort of shapes Churchill into the eventual leader he becomes during his years as a correspondent is his views sort of on diplomacy. He believes that you have to make it easy for the other side to accept defeat. He thinks if you place terms of unconditional surrender on the opposing side is just going to keep on fighting because they have nothing to lose. And we see that prominently come to the forefront in World War II. At the Casablanca Conference of 1943, Roosevelt announces to the press the Allies will accept nothing but unconditional surrender from the Germans. And behind the scenes, Churchill is aghast by this decision because he basically thinks Roosevelt has given the Germans license to just keep on fighting no matter what.
You talk in the book, and I found it fascinating, and you mentioned this, which is about how he went out of his way to insert himself into action. The physical courage of this guy is something that I found very striking.
Yeah, so did I. You know, I think when we think of Churchill, we think of him sort of for his moral courage, you know, standing up against appeasement and voicing concerns about the threat of Nazi Germany when nobody else would. But he was also a man of great physical courage, which is something I discovered in the writing of this book. You're right. He certainly went out of his way to put himself in the action. Again, you know, we have to keep in mind that, you know, he was writing these articles as a way to build his sort of public persona and eventually kickstart a political career. And obviously, you can't prove yourself in combat if you're sitting behind the lines. You know, the reason for him putting himself in the middle of the action, there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, you know, at the same time he was a correspondent, he was also a soldier, which was a very rare combination. You don't usually have soldiers reporting on the battles they're fighting in, but he was both. And secondly, he had a great sense of his own destiny. From a very, very early age, he believed he was destined to do something great. When he's on the northwest frontier of India fighting against sort of the region's Pashtun tribesmen, he sends a letter home to his mother, and he says, you know, sort of paraphrasing here, he says, I don't believe that gods would have created a being as, you know, bright as I for so crude an ending as death on the battlefield. And he had a real sense that he was going to achieve greatness. And so I think he sort of had this belief that destiny would see him through, that he would escape harm on the battlefield. And he did certainly go through some horrendous experiences. He had many near misses, but each time he sort of emerged from these experiences unscathed, it sort of bolstered his belief that, you know, destiny had something else in store for him, which I think sort of helped feed his courage.
The name of the new book is Winston Churchill Reporting. We're talking to Simon Reed on the roundtable this morning. When you look at this idea of being a journalist while simultaneously serving as a soldier, how common was that in the British Army?
Yeah, well, it wasn't common. And it should be said that there are a lot of generals in the British Army at the time who frowned upon it. They dismissed Churchill as a glory hound and a medal seeker. And certainly there was, you know, some element of truth to that. He was sort of looking, again, to build his public persona. But the thing to keep in mind about, you know, sort of this experience with Churchill is not everyone was a Churchill, and not everyone had Churchill's family connections. Churchill's father, Lord Randolph, had been, you know, a big star in the Conservative Party. His mother was one of London's most beautiful hostesses. She threw very elegant parties, was very popular. And so Churchill had the social connections to make things happen. And Churchill was a guy, you know, what Churchill wanted, Churchill got. And he never, you know, he didn't play by the rules. The only rules Churchill played by were his own rules. And so when he decided he wanted to be a correspondent, he really didn't have that much problem making it happen. You know, his family had connections in the War Office. They had connections with people, obviously, in politics. And so it was very easy for him to pull strings through his mother to get what he wanted. But it was very rare, and there was a lot of grumbling sort of in the upper echelons of the British military about him doing it.
When you look at that idea of serving, what did he consider himself? Which came first?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I sort of wondered that when I was writing the book, because he doesn't really ever say what he considered himself first. I think he probably thought of himself equal parts both, because both roles sort of helped serve one another. Going off to combat gave him material for his reporting, while his reporting gave him a venue to sort of share what he'd gone through in combat. So obviously the war gives him material to write. So I think he thought of himself equal parts both. That being said, he never did have plans to make a career out of the military. You know, to him it was just a temporary thing. And, you know, obviously after he gets out of the army, he turns his war corresponding years into a very successful literary career. You know, we tend to think of Churchill as a politician, which obviously he was, but he made his living primarily through writing. I mean, by the time he's 25, he's already written, like, you know, four works of nonfiction and a novel. So he took the writing very seriously. You know, after he gets out of the military, then he does consider himself primarily an author.
Simon Reed joins us. We're talking about Winston Churchill and his adventures as a young war correspondent. The name of the book is Winston Churchill Reporting. And even in his journalism, if there was something that a military leader did, he would let his opinion be known within the confines of that article.
Yeah, that's the one thing. You know, Churchill, obviously, you know, his legacy, part of his legacy lies in Churchill voicing his opinion. He never said anything to gain popularity points. You know, he just said what he believed to be right, even if it was going to prove unpopular. And that is something that we see all the way back to Churchill in his early 20s when he's going off and covering these campaigns. It's amazing, really, that he had the guts to do it, because he's writing these articles to try and eventually become a politician and join the British government. Yet he has no qualms about criticizing the government he wants to be a part of. And that extends, obviously, the British military. We see it a lot in South Africa in the Second Boer War, where you can almost view that as a prologue to the carnage of the Western Front in the First World War. It's a very bloody battle. Churchill sees a lot of what he considers ineptitude in the British generals, and he has no problem putting that in print. And that attitude of his, and I'll say what needs to be said, and to hell with the consequences. Obviously, that's gone a long way in sort of cementing his legacy as sort of a great political figure.
And there is also, I just want to make this point, of the eloquence in his writing. Let us not forget that he is a beautiful writer, even as a correspondent, which, of course, was very evident later in his career.
Yeah, his writing was astounding. Well, one of the things I actually found daunting when I was writing this book is, obviously, I use a lot of excerpts from his war reporting, and you've got to put your writing up alongside Churchill's.
Yeah. A little intimidating, sure.
It's a little intimidating. It definitely makes you stay on your A game. When you read the articles that he wrote, it does sort of blow your mind that this is a guy, in his early 20s. Like I said, he's writing these pieces between 20 and 25, and the writing is fantastic. You know, when he goes to Cuba and he follows his first five articles there, the writing is very good. But the Cuban campaign, it's sort of a sleepy campaign. Nothing, the fighting he sees there rarely elevates itself above a skirmish. So there's not a whole lot to really report. As the sort of campaigns that he covers get progressively violent, his writing becomes a lot more vivid, and his powers of description are amazing. I mean, just really brutal. One of the great examples, I think, is one of the campaigns he covers is the British reconquest of the Sudan in 1898, where sort of these Islamic tribes that have risen up against Egyptian and British rule in the region. And so the British send an Anglo-Egyptian army into the deserts to sort of lay the rebellion to waste. And Churchill takes part during this campaign in one of the last great cavalry charges in British military history. It takes place on September 2nd, 1898, outside the city of Omdurman. And his reporting on what it's like to go through this cavalry charge, where his regiment of about 350 men charge into a line of about 2,000 Sudanese warriors, it's a fantastic piece of descriptive writing. And he has a real talent of bringing the horrors of conflict to the British public back at home. And what's interesting is we see that same skill later in 1940, when he uses that ability to sort of convey the horrors of battle and the sort of the glory of war to the British public in his war speeches. He talked very much like he wrote. I mean, he just had a wonderful command of the language. It just seems to have been it was just a gift. I wish that I could write like he did when he was in his 20s.
If you talk to most novelists and even historians and others who write full time, and they talk about if they have a background in journalism, of how it helps them in their writing pursuit. And I would assume even in speech, I mean, we're in the age of the speechwriter today, but in writing these war speeches, I would think that background would come in incredibly useful.
It did. It came in very, it proved to be very useful. You know, when you're a journalist and you're writing news articles, you have to get to the point. You know, you can't beat around the bush. You have to get to the point. You have to deliver the message clearly and concisely. And you have to do it using language that appeals to the masses. And Churchill did that in his speeches. His speeches are very clear. They're very to the point. The other thing about his speeches, which you also see sort of if you go back and you look at his journalism, Churchill never shied away from delivering bad news. You know, if there was something horrible that had to be reported, he reported it. And in his speeches, if there was something, you know, terrible he had to share with the British public, he shared it. He approached the subject very clinically. But he had a great ability to deliver sort of complex military matters in very simple everyday language in a way that everyone could understand. And like I said, the speeches are a perfect example of that. But that's all something that takes root in the journalism of his younger years.
The name of the book is Winston Churchill Reporting: Adventures of a Young War Correspondent. The book is published by Da Capo. Simon Reed, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure.
Joe, it was great. I loved it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Winston Churchill Reporting by Simon Reed. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.